Morning, KBC. I'm Adam Giles, the youth director here at KBC, and I know what you're thinking. Yes, they let me up here again. I hope today that you receive the message clearly that God has placed in my heart that I'm going to give today as we dive into the letter of the church to the Church of Philadelphia. Before we start, I would like it would be good to know a little bit about the city that the church is founded in. The city of Philadelphia was founded in 197 BC by Memnius II of Pergamon, and he named the city Philadelphia in honor of his brother and successor, Attalus II. If that's confusing, I get it. Attalus and Philadelphia are not too similar in names. Attalus was also known as Philadelphus, and the name of the city means city of brotherly love. And as we get into the purpose of the founding of this city, it might take on a slightly different context, okay? Philadelphia was on the frontier. It was the foremost trade zone for the area. And you would assume that made the city very wealthy. And it did. Philadelphia earned the title Little Athens in regards to the number of temples that sprouted up all throughout the city. Philadelphia's purpose, and one that was at the heart of its foundation and founding, was to promote everything Greek to the lands beyond. Alexander, who passed through here on his way to conquer the world, and all the kings that followed in his footsteps in leading this place, had one goal. The goal of spreading the Hellenistic gospel and the ways to the ends of the earth. They wanted it to go everywhere. What better way to do that than to build a city on the edge of the civilized world where people would visit constantly? With all the religious temples that sprouted up, all the tribes in the area would be passing through there for trade, and they'd be visiting those temples and learning about the Hellenistic gods. However, there are risks to being on the edge of the civilized world, to being a gateway to the civilized world. When positioned on the edge of the barbarian world, you're the first step for a conquering army. When positioned, in fact, leading back to the point of the naming the city as brotherly love, the original purpose of Philadelphia was it was meant to be the canary in the coal mine, the buffering zone for the capital city. And sadly for Philadelphians, they knew what their true purpose was. Are there any Lord of the Rings fans in the crowd? I see a few hands. Do you remember the scene where Pippin has to climb the cliff to get all the way up to the beacon that's sitting on the top of the cliff in Gondor? And in turn, he gets up there and he struggles a little bit, but he finally gets it lit. And then in turn, that beacon is seen by another crew, and they light their beacon. And the message gets lit farther and farther down the line. And finally, Rohan knows that they're in danger and they need to be saved and have help. This act in the movie and the scene that follows has a very powerful atmosphere to it, right? I've heard it described as one of the most emotional moments in the whole movie. I can't say I would describe it that way, but if you check the YouTube comments on the YouTube channel, you'll find that you'll be well informed. It is one of the emotional moments of the movie. See, brave people had to weather the storm and stand on the mountaintops and wait for a faraway beacon to be lit so they can light theirs. And in the end, a city gets saved. Well, that's Philadelphia's purpose. However, the sad part for the city is the city is actually the beacon. See, the risk of raiding and invasion is real, and Philadelphia was there to be the warning beacon for Pergamon behind it. If the city burnt, Pergamon would know that an army is coming and they'd be able to gather their arms and get ready for a battle. That's brotherly love, right? Can you tell who the oldest brother is? For Philadelphians, life is not one that is without its risks, without its trials. If the risk of invasion or raids was not enough, they are also known for small earthquakes. And in 17 AD, as Jesus is finishing up his apprenticeship as a carpenter under his earthly father Joseph, the area around Philadelphia was struck by a major earthquake. Buildings in the area were flattened, and cities all around the area were affected to one degree or another. But for poor Philadelphia, what they didn't know was that their city was actually founded on a fault zone. This actually put them right in the middle of the earthquake, where the damage was the most severe. If we take a moment to consider the damage to the earthquakes in Haiti in 2010, this was just 4 years after I had finished high school, and I was still ignorant to the fact that the world did not revolve around me and little old Springdale. I didn't watch the news, but I still remember hearing how widespread the damage was in Haiti. I know people who went there to help with the cleanup. I remember some of the stories that were people lost under rubble and the video of equipment and cranes slowly trying to peel the rubble back and not cause more damage. When we think of Philadelphia, we're talking about a world before bobcats, before tractors. Everything would have been extricated by hand, and it would have been a slow and painful job. We can only assume that Philadelphia would take decades to recover from this life-changing event. Wealth and lives would be lost under rubble, and would not be seen in months, but in decades. Where we find ourselves in Philadelphia's timeline is years after the earthquake in 17 AD, but we know that they would still be recovering from such a disaster. Philadelphia in particular was so significantly affected by this earthquake that the emperor of the time, Tiberius, excused the citizens there in the city from taxation for a time. You know it's bad when the government lets you not pay your taxes. So we find ourselves with a community that is founded for the purpose of being a beacon, a gateway to the civilized world, and a community still recuperating from a massive disaster. And these are all three very important points to remember as we take a look at the letter to the small but significant Christian community. So let's start digging into the letter. To the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, "These are the words of him who is holy and true, who holds the key of David. What he opens, no one can shut, and what he shuts, no one can open." Here we have a passage that's tied to the Old Testament. In Isaiah 22:22, it says, "And I will place on his shoulders the key of the house of David. He shall open and none shall shut. He shall shut and none shall open. I will give him the key to the house of David, the highest position in the royal court." So the language here is used for a purpose, right? It's used to emphasize Christ as the Messiah of David's line with the absolute power to control entrance into the heavenly kingdom. Then the passage turns its focus onto the church of Philadelphia in a very direct way. It says, "I know your deeds." Has any of your parents ever looked at you and said, like, "I know what you've done"? And in that moment, you're like, well, thankfully, that's not the case for Philadelphia. He says, "I know your deeds. I see I have placed before you an open door that no one can shut." So this brings us back to our history lesson that I started at the beginning. There was a point for that. I love history, but I understand it's not everyone's thing. See, Philadelphia has a mission. One of its founding missions is it is a door to the civilized world, where the trade caravans pass through year-round and traveling merchants from every corner of the world pass through to get to the other corners of the known world. The Church of Philadelphia has a mission, right? Much like the city's founding mission to spread the Hellenistic gospel to all the ends of the earth, but instead it's being called to spread the gospel, the good news. Everything Christ-like to those that are passing through their doors. The imagery is here is really easy to follow, all right? Christ has the keys to heaven, and he holds that door open. But he says to the Church of Philadelphia, you have a door too. A door that you must maintain and spread God's good news to everyone who passes through it, so that they can reach the door that Christ holds open for them. This passage tells us that this is the gift that the Church of Philadelphia has been given, and it's a gift that they're using well. God knows their deeds. Well, it's a good thing that this is an easy place to live where there's no risks, right? Okay, maybe not. But thankfully, the church has grown strong and stable, and it can fulfill its mission, right? Let's continue to read. I know that you have little strength. You have kept my word and have not denied me. Maybe they're not strong. I think we need to sum it up a little bit. The author knows their deeds. He's given them an opportunity, a well-traveled door, to spread his word. And he knows that they have little strength. And yet they stand true to his calling. See, the Church of Philadelphia is weak. It's small, but it's not insignificant. It's clear that the author wanted us to know that they are weak. I mean, this isn't a possibility. He says, I know you have little strength. There's no doubt, right? These people are the survivors of the city. They are people who have lost friends and family and houses and their living. They live in fear and understanding that they are just a tool to save the city. They are not a strong church, but we know from experience that means just God will do greater things with them. If the Church of Philadelphia had a verse written on its door for people to read as they entered, it might be Timothy 6:17-19, which says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Condemn them, or command them, to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of that life that's truly life. Let me repeat, nor put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. Let's put that in perspective for the Church of Philadelphia. The walls of the church could fall at any moment. This place is built upon a fault line. This place is known for its earthquakes. No, they didn't have one like the one in 1780 every year, but small tremors would be commonplace. A constant reminder of what could happen. They could fulfill their role as the canary in the coal mine and be the first step for a conquering army at any moment. We are used to secure borders in Canada. Our biggest concern is when Americans start threatening to move here when the election goes the way they didn't want it. We don't understand the threat that they lived under every day. To make matters worse, they know this is their one purpose. They are there to let the capital know that they need to gear up because an army's on the way. That can't happen without their destruction. But their hope is not in the money in their pocket or the roof over their heads, but in God and the task that he's given them. And with that, they're rich in deeds. They're generous and willing to share. I can only wonder how many merchants down on their luck found themselves sitting at the tables of these church members, breaking bread with them. The traveling merchants that frequently visited Philadelphia were given the love of Christ, and it was possible they would take that love and find themselves back in their home country months or years later, spreading that same love and message. Now I want to say, the church of today is by no means weak, but with the collapse of the age of Christendom, there's no denying we're in a different world than we were before. And in some cases, it's a hostile world. But like the Church of Philadelphia, we're called to continue to live up to his calling, to be rich in deeds. Our mission is to spread the good news to all the ends of the earth. And not unlike the Church of Philadelphia, we've been given a well-traveled door to interact with, multiple in fact. Those doors are our neighborhoods, our community, our workplace. With the age of information, Canada and Canada being as multicultural as it is today, we do not have a clue who might hear about the love that you extended to a neighbor, the love of God you extended to them. Do you know your neighbor? The merchants traveling through Philadelphia had months or years before they got to return home. Today we can punch 11 buttons on our phone or set up a Zoom call and we're home. Maybe not there in person, but at least we're reaching out to them, right? Our love of God to our neighbor in Canada can reach loved ones around the world. The world is full of burdens today, not just for Canadians, but entire world, right? People are struggling to pay bills and struggling with fears and the dangers of the world that are around them. People will struggle with things that we'll never understand. But with each struggle, there's an opportunity for us to attempt to replicate God's love for them. A chance for us to show them the gift that God gives us every day. This was the call on the Church of Philadelphia, to endure the burdens so they could be the light to those around them. This is our calling, and this is what we're called to do. While I was in Niagara Falls last month, I was listening to a guest speaker in the forum talking about a neighborhood in Toronto. What I learned in that session was that there's a population in that neighborhood that a certain percentage of it, a high percentage of it, comes from a country where the good news is banned. There's still 52 countries where the Bible is not welcome in today. However, there's a church in Toronto who has the chance to love, feed, and care about people from one of those countries. That's our gate to man today. How many people here have family members that are not in Canada, that are from a different country that they talk to every day, or at least on a regular basis? When you call them, what do you share with them? The ups, the downs. What you've done this past week, what you're planning to do next week. Today, the world is a lot smaller than it was 2,000 years ago. And yet, how we complete our mission has not changed much. The traveling merchants and the caravans and the guards that were meant to know God's love, they were meant to know it. They were meant to feel it. That was what the church was to do with this gift. They were called to invite people in their homes, break bread, help those sick to continue on their travels. Yes, the goal was to love those people and see them reach Jesus. Yet it wasn't meant to end there. The purpose of the city to speak Hellenistic ways to the world created the perfect chance for Christianity to spread instead. At the time of this church, Hellenistic ways, though not gone, are less common or forgotten. The Roman Empire owns the Hellenistic world at this point. And in a beautiful way, God uses a city that's meant to spread another religion, a false religion, to spread his love centuries later. And I have a hard time planning a youth event next week. Those merchants are meant to know Christ, but they're also meant to go home and introduce their families to him as well. The good deeds of Philadelphia are twofold. One side is to love your neighbor, and the second is to build the kingdom. The world is small today. The world is the smallest it's ever been. And our gate is bigger. Our merchants are more plentiful. Our opportunities to love are endless. My challenge to you today would be to know your neighbor. To know your co-worker. Find ways to personally share Christ's love for them through your words and actions. With the passing of COVID restrictions, I've heard horrible stories about people being forgotten. We've expanded on the suburban life of exclusion. As Bob has said many times, we leave our houses, we run to the van, we go to do our tasks, we come home, we run back inside, we close the blinds and turn off the porch light. This is not a new thing. It was here before, but today it's more easily done. With the change of workplaces going online, some people even have less reason to leave their homes. Online shopping, No more family mall trips. Online groceries, prescription pickups, Uber Eats. One could spend an entire month in their house without going out and not miss out on any necessities of life. If we want to know our neighbor, it will have to be through our choice to engage. You will have to make a choice to go out of your regular rhythm to find ways to engage them. For myself, this is an uncomfortable challenge. I'm more introverted than most of you would probably believe. But that's my burden to bear. However, this isn't how the letter ends. To those who are victorious, to those who have kept his word, who have fulfilled their mission, God gives them this promise at the end of the letter. To the one who is victorious, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God. Never again will they leave it. I will write on them the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which is coming down out of heaven from my God. And I will also write on them my new name. The pillar metaphor is used to convey the idea of stability and permanence. This is echoed in the second statement. Never again will they leave it. Remember the church's history for a moment. This is a church that's prone to earthquakes, is most likely still recuperating from a major one, one that would have caused hundreds of people to flee the city to find temporary dwelling in the countryside or having to make do with temporary shelters in the city. This would be a special promise to that community. There will come a day when your striving to survive will come to an end. And because you've endured through these times of trial and have still been faithful, I put my name on you. The burdens of this world that give us opportunities to reach out to our neighbors are not just on them alone. We're affected by the same burdens as they are. And I want to recognize that before I end this message. Inflation affects us as much as it does our neighbor. Loneliness affects us just as much as it does our coworker. And this message isn't meant to downplay our burdens. In fact, I hope it magnifies it, for we're all each other's neighbors as well. We're all called to love each other and help each other through our burdens. This isn't just meant to be in your neighborhood, but in this community as well. Philadelphia's special promises for us as well, not just to the work and the mission that they were given, we're also given the strength of God and the trust in Him to be pillars of His name who endure together. And one day He will look down at our church and say, I know your deeds. I know you have little strength, that you have kept my word and not denied my name. And now I write my name upon you. Let us pray. Father, I love you, and I thank you for your love. I lift up your church. Struggling through the world, it finds itself in, and I thank you for the mission you have given us. The mission to love, the mission to find our treasure in heaven and build our kingdom here on earth. I pray this week you place opportunities for great deeds in your name. I know you know who needs your love, and who in this room sits down two desks from them at work. You know who needs your grace, and who in this room lives four houses down from them. Create opportunities for us to cross paths and build a passion in our hearts to love our neighbors. Help relieve our burdens in this world and continue to give us the strength we need to be pillars of your kingdom who endure. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.